I do want to assign your Joseph Smith paper. I don't know if I actually formally assigned it. I don't think I did. And so I want a brief paper on Mr. Smith.
Yeah,
you do tonight?
Yeah.
Okay. I just can't remember all these things. Sometimes feel like I've woken up into a fog. Well, then you can go ahead and pass those forward. If you would. And one last thing on the Jehovah's Witnesses regarding the test. I really don't know why I didn't check and make sure on these things before we took the test, but for some reason I didn't. But it was 2/3 that did leave the organization because of tighter controls. So that is the correct percentage, 2/3. And then concerning Christ, when he was resurrected and he appeared a number of times during the 40 days, he did appear in physical bodies, but each one was different. Each body was different. And then concerning the J manuscripts, those are Hebrew translations of different portions of the New Testament. And the whole list of them are found in the front of your Kingdom Interlinear if you have one of those. So they are Hebrew. Each one is a Hebrew manuscript. It's a translation of a portion of the Greek New Testament. Okay, we're talking about the Book of Mormon, and we were explaining some of the history that's found in it. And the first group of people that it involves were the Jaredites. And so you'll need to remember that. And the date on that was 2250 BC. And we were noting this statement in Ether 220 concerning making the hole in the top and making the hole in the bottom, because evidently the Lord forgot that they needed to have some way to breathe, which was kind of interesting. And they made 8 barges, and they were driven by the wind for 344 days. Now, I don't know how a barge can be driven by the wind, but somehow these barges were driven by the wind. And they landed at exactly the same time in exactly the same place. These eight barges landed at the same time and at the same place. And they landed on the west coast of Central America. Now, as they moved into other areas in the Americas, moving up into North America, they founded widespread civilizations and they built many cities. And we are particularly informed that they also had horses and asses and elephants and Kuralams. Now you got to watch out for those Kuralams. Kurelomns. Now what a Kuralam is, nobody knows. But also the Cumoms. So there's the Kuralams and the Cumoms. Cumoms. And all you can do with those two words is just put big question marks. That's all you can do. This is part of Joseph Smith's ability to spin tall tales. See, some people have the amazing ability to make up names and make up words just like that, one right after the other. That's never been my forte. That's been mine. But evidently he had that kind of a talent. And in a sense, it is a talent. He must have been quite quick with his mind. But then, on the other side of the coin, he doesn't seem to have been all that smart because of a lot of the things we'll find out concerning the Book of Mormon. Now, all of these animals were useful to man, especially the elephants, the Kuralams, and the Cumoms. That's in Ether 9, verse 19. This is really, in a sense, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be kind of entertaining. If this was... Well, we're welcoming you to a new comedy show called The Book of Mormon. It would be kind of fun. But the millions of people that are going to the Lake of Fire because of it takes all, in a sense, all the fun out of it, of course. Now, the Jaredites did not get along well with each other. And they engaged in savage battles. And in one, 2 million mighty men died, plus their wives and children. That's in Ether 15:2. Now, numbers like 2 million, it's easy to write it on a piece of paper. You put a 2 and put these zeros after it, that's pretty simple. But you put 2 million people in a battle, and you are talking about something really incredible. And this is totally unrealistic. Totally unrealistic. It's not in the realm of reality at all. You have to stretch your mind so far to give any sort of credibility to it. And the facts of the matter is that there is no credibility to it. Now, the war continued to rage so furiously that finally there were only 2 warriors left. Only 2 left. And those 2 were Coriantumr, C-O-R-I-A-N-T-U-M-R, Coriantumr, and Shiz, S-H-I-Z. And in the final battle, Shiz was killed. And so he dies, and this is how it's described in Ether 15:31. Now, this is rather amazing. And it came to pass that after he, Coriantumr, had smitten off the head of Shiz, cut his head off. His head is off, okay? That's pretty clear, right? That Shiz raised upon his hands and fell. And after that, he had struggled for breath. He died. Now, wait just a moment. Wait just a moment. You can't do that without your head. There's something wrong here. This won't work. This can't work. This is an impossibility. Now, this is quite a story. It's a pretty amazing story, isn't it? It's totally impossible. This is total fiction. This is better than most fiction that's available today by far. And see, Mormons don't use the Book of Mormon. They don't use it. They do not use it. It has none of their doctrines in it. It doesn't have one of their doctrines. So they don't use it. The book is not really that important to them. Now, it sounds like they live and die over the Book of Mormon, but they really don't. It's Doctrine and Covenants and the Pearl of Great Price, primarily Doctrine and Covenants. And I don't really have the slightest idea what they do with such a thing like this. There's more or less just an ignoring of it and just some sort of an attitude that, the prophet wrote it, and we just accept it. And yes, there are difficult things, and it's really a phenomenal situation.
When did they say it was written? I know they say it was buried in 420 A.D. Do you know the date? Was it written then also?
Well, parts of it were written leading up to that.
Okay.
And Moroni, we'll talk about Moroni and his part in this, but it covers, I don't know... well, we'll get some of it right here, and then we'll go through the rest of it. But it covers a period of time. And then it just stayed there from 420 A.D. or right around that time all the way up till Joseph Smith.
When he quotes the words of Jesus, it's supposed to be written after he lived. I mean, they're not... Because in the Book of Mormon, they quote Jesus. That
mm-hmm.
would be after he lived. And
mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he came here in 34 A.D. and so had to take care of the Indians here in America. What he had to do. Now, Cori Antemir, though seriously wounded in the battle, survived and lived with the people of Zarahemla, Z-A-R-A-H-E-M-L-A. And he lived with them for 9 moons. And whatever 9 moons are, that's an Omni 21. Omni 21. And the only other survivor of the Jaredites was the prophet Ether. He's the only other survivor. And he recorded the history of his people on 24 plates. Thus, the Jaredites were completely obliterated from North America. And so the record of it was from Ether. Just that he was the only one that really survived. And he recorded this. And then, sometime after this, Ether would die. And all that's left are these 24 plates. That's all that's left of the Jaredites. Now, the second and more important immigration to America was that of Lehi, L-E-H-I, and his descendants. Now, Lehi was a Jewish prophet of the tribe of Manasseh, and he was forced to leave Jerusalem in 600 B.C. So in 600 B.C., Lehi was forced to leave Jerusalem, and he was a prophet. And he was of the tribe of Manasseh. And he was forced to leave because of persecution. And he was testifying against the wickedness of the Jews and his prediction of the impending destruction of Jerusalem. So Lehi is a contemporary of Jeremiah and evidently is carrying on Jeremiah's ministry, evidently hand in hand with Jeremiah. Because this is what Jeremiah was doing right at this time in history. Now, of course, Lehi didn't exist. This guy did not exist. I mean, always keep that in mind. This is totally fictitious as well. Now, Lehi, his wife, and his 4 sons. Now, the wife's name is not given. Now, the names... Okay, I'll just go in here. Okay, and they left Jerusalem and they went to live in the region bordering on the Red Sea. And then in obedience to God's command, Lehi's sons were sent back to Jerusalem in order to obtain from a certain Laban a set of brass plates. That's also part of what we find in the Book of Mormon, as far as things that Joseph Smith dealt with and translated. So there are these brass plates of Laban. And they contain the 5 books of Moses, various prophecies, as well as Lehi's genealogy. And so these are the so-called brass plates of Laban. Now, as Lehi and his sons journeyed on, they came to the shore of the ocean where Nephi, one of the sons, proceeded to build a ship in response to a divine revelation, telling him to do so. The entire group now entered the ship and began to sail eastward. With the aid of a ball containing a spindle which pointed out the way in which they should go, which Lehi had previously just found on the ground. And this is in 1 Nephi 16:10. Now, this is a mariner's compass, is what it is. Now, compasses were not invented until the 12th century A.D. No such thing as a compass until the 12th century A.D. That's the 1100s. And this is known as an anachronism. And this is where you find things stated and they're totally out of history. You're dealing with a certain historical context, and either in the context, which is late date, you find something very modern, or you find a modern historical presentation, and then you have ancient things as an actual part of it. It's where something is out of place historically. Anachronism. A-N-A-C-H-R-O-N-I-S-M. Anachronism. It's an anachronism. There is no compass. He could not find a compass laying on the ground. This is an impossibility. It's totally out of place historically. So anytime you find something out of place historically, that's an anachronism. That's what it's called. And we'll see two other main ones, glass and steel, are also. And those are anachronisms, because they had no glass, and it's totally impossible for them to have steel. Cannot be done. There's no way. And this is not in the category of the Red Sea being rolled back. We're not talking about those kind of things. We're not skeptics with demons of unbelief, and we're stumbling over the rolling back of the Red Sea. We're dealing with history where it's showing men doing something themselves. It's not talking about the power of God or miracles of God. So to have a compass, to have glass, to have steel, cannot be. It's totally out of place. Now this shows that, see, Joseph Smith was an ignorant man. He evidently had talent and abilities to think and to talk and to tell stories and other such things, but at the same time he was very ignorant. And so you've got both of these things making up his personality, and both come through very clearly in the Book of Mormon, as well in his other writings. Now, in course of time, they landed on the west coast of South America, somewhere near Peru. And there's six of them total. There's Lehi, his wife, Laman, L-A-M-A-N, Nephi, N-E-P-H-I, and the whole thing really is going to end up revolving around the Lamanites and the Nephites. And then the third son is Lemuel, L-E-M-U-E-L, and the last son, this is an amazing one, his name's Sam. You've got... yeah, Sam. I felt bad that we'd named one of our cats Sam after I found out about this. So, Laman, Nephi, Lemuel, and Sam. Not Samuel. Not Samson. Sam. That's a real good Bible name. That fits right in there with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Sam. Oh, it's so amazing. Now I have to get my composure here again. Okay, of the sons of Lehi, the most prominent, as I mentioned, were Nephi and Laman. Now the family of Laman and that of his brother Lemuel were continually in rebellion against the Lord. So Laman and Lemuel, they were in rebellion against God. And consequently God cursed them and caused a skin of blackness to come upon them. 2 Nephi 5:21. I think really and truly, Joseph Smith had a problem with racism. I think that's really the truth. Because what he does in this, he was clearly against black people. There was something about it. And then the fact that throughout the vast majority of the history of the Mormon Church, up until I think maybe 1978, somewhere in that vicinity, they would not let blacks be in the priesthood. And that has changed since then, but that would show a racism, would show a bias, a prejudice. Now the Lamanites, and that's the descendants of Laman, They were the ancestors of the American Indians. But the problem is, according then to Mormon teaching, the American Indians are not of Mongolian race. M-O-N-G-O-L-I-A-N. But anthropologists, who don't care one bit about Mormonism, Christianity, or anything else, basically, as a whole group, they say that's totally false. They are Mongolian. They are of that race. But according to this, they wouldn't be. What you'd actually have is that the Indians are somehow dark-skinned Israelites of the tribe of Manasseh. But Israelites are not Mongolian. There's a huge problem here as far as anthropology goes. And that's another thing that shows that the Book of Mormon is an impossibility. It cannot be true. And I think what word is involved here is Caucasoid, or something close to that. I think I have it in here somewhere. And I'll give the word to you if I can find it. Yes, Caucasoid, C-A-U-C-A-S-O-I-D. Now that's what they should be if they're of Israel, of the tribe of Manasseh. But they're not. They're Mongoloid. And the Book of Mormon does not work anthropologically. It just does not work. Now the other descendants of Lehi, however, who had begun to call themselves Nephites. So you've got three groups here. You've got the Jaredites, 2250 B.C. You've got the Lamanites and the Nephites. And those are the ancestry of Laman and Nephi that all came together, and they're part of the family of Lehi, and he left Jerusalem in 600 B.C. So those are the main groups here. Now, Nephi was recognized as their king, and they did not rebel against God's commandments. And gradually the Nephites migrated to Central and North America. And here they founded a great civilization and built large cities. And in AD 34, in fulfillment of a prophecy made earlier by Nephi, and that's in 1 Nephi 12, verses 6 and following, the Lord Jesus Christ himself came down from heaven, prescribed baptism by immersion, called and commissioned 12 disciples, instituted the sacrament of bread and wine, and uttered many teachings, including virtually the entire Sermon on the Mount. And that's in 3 Nephi 11:28. 3 Nephi 11:28. And so, see, much time has passed here. And in this time, they've migrated into North America, and they've built large cities. When you get to 34 AD, Christ comes, and he talks to the Nephites, and he's commissioning them, bringing them the gospel. Now, at the time of Christ's appearance, all the inhabitants of the land were converted. That's what it says in 4 Nephi 2. 4 Nephi 2. And though there was peace and harmony, so they were already converted, and there was peace and harmony between the Lamanites and the Nephites for 200 years. So there'd been peace and harmony for 200 years. And that's in 4 Nephi, verse 17. 4 Nephi, verse 17 and following. So even though they'd been converted, that is the Nephites, and then there had been peace and harmony between them and the Lamanites. After Christ came, there then arose hostility between these two groups. And there was constant warfare. And that continued for a long time. And in AD 385, the two groups assembled for a final battle near the hill Cumorah. So now we're up in New York. So we're at the hill Cumorah. And in this battle, the Lamanites killed all the Nephites except one. And that one is Moroni. The plot thickens. Whose father's name had been Mormon. So Mormon's the father of Moroni. Now, this was a giant battle. Now, the most interesting thing about this is that the Mormons used to know where the hill Cumorah was. And they would take, Mormons would take trips to this place in New York, and this was the hill Cumorah. But that's a problem now, archaeologically. Because if there was a huge battle here at the close of the 4th century, as we're coming to the 400s, then there would be artifacts by the ton. Because that's the way it is everywhere else throughout the whole world. There is nothing. What they identified as the hill Cumorah doesn't have anything that would ever suggest a war that would be involved with it, with huge numbers of people. And so now they say, well, it's not the hill Cumorah. So now they don't know where it is. And so that's an example of them changing their history. And they've had to do this many, 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 many times. See, nothing that Joseph Smith presented was historical. That's, many of you have heard of Sir William Ramsay. We have some of his books in the library. Now, that's what Ramsay did with the Bible. He's doing what we are doing, and anthropologists and archaeologists have done with the Book of Mormon. Now, see, Ramsay didn't believe the Book of Acts was historical. He believed the whole thing was a myth. Do you know there are a lot of people that don't believe that there's any history to this book? They believe it's just a myth. Totally a myth. And that's the category that I put the Book of Mormon. And it is, in fact, a total myth. The Bible is not a myth. It's historically accurate. When it deals with history, it's accurate. So Ramsay went into Asia Minor, and he felt like the weakest thing was the Book of Acts, the travels of Paul, because it mentioned all these cities, all these travels. It's going back a long time. You know, 1,800 plus years, that's a long time to go back. And who knows really if those cities existed. When you're in the 1800s, and you don't have all the information available that we have today. I mean, he was a pioneer in this thing. He didn't pick up another book written by somebody like himself who'd already been there. People hadn't been there. People had not investigated these things. So he went there. And everywhere there said there should be a city, he started digging. He found city after city after city after city after city after city after city. And when he wrote his research down and presented it in a book form, oh, the skeptics, they thought they were going to really have some new ammunition. They found out this poor old guy had been converted. Now he's a believer in Jesus Christ. And nobody's ever been able to overturn one thing that he found. Nobody, not one thing. Now the Book of Mormon, if it was really true, then you should be able to dig and dig and dig and find all these cities and find out all, find artifacts by the train load. But you can't find it. See, God has given everything we need so that we can have a class on authenticity of the Bible, and we know that the Bible's authentic. You could never have a book on the authenticity of Mormonism. Everybody would be laughing. They'd be rolling the aisles by the time he got partway through. So utterly ridiculous. That's the truth. It's really the truth. He was not a historian. He wasn't putting together anything historically. He was just writing. He was on a flight of fancy. And so when you check these things out, none of it works. Total impossibility. But see, that's where the tragedy is. See, Mormons really don't have anything, but yet they keep getting thousands and thousands and thousands of converts. And this is why we've got to keep finding God and His reality and His power and His love and get free so that we can show the world what we really have rather than just having a lot up here and we talk about it. We talk a good story and we talk a good gospel. We've got to find it and really live it. This is absolutely vital. Now, Mormon had been writing down the history of his people. So Mormon had been writing it down. And if his son is alive here in 385 A.D., then maybe this could have been started in writing maybe in about 300 A.D., somewhere in that vicinity. And he'd been writing down this history of the Nephites on golden plates, because he was a Nephite. And the process of recording this history had begun sooner, though, with Nephi. So it goes all the way back to Nephi himself. So that goes back to the 600s, the 500s, actually. And then it had been continued by other Nephite historians. Nephi had begun engraving two kinds of plates, larger plates containing a secular history of the Nephites, and smaller plates containing their spiritual history. Mormon, who lived in the 4th century A.D., had abridged the larger plates of Nephi and had added to this abridgment the smaller plates of Nephi in totality and completeness. So then what he had done, he'd taken these larger plates of secular history, abridged those, but then included the smaller plates, which gave the spiritual history. And he put those in completely. This entire collection of golden plates, Mormon hid in the hill Cumorah before the Battle of Cumorah. After the battle, Moroni, the only Nephite survivor, added some additional plates containing the books of Ether and Moroni and buried them also in the hill. This happened in 421 A.D. 1,400 years later, so Mormons claim, in the years 1823 to 1827, Moroni now changed into an angel, though he is sometimes called a resurrected being, appeared to Joseph Smith, and he told him where the plates were hidden, and in time permitted him to take them. So that's what has happened here. Now, the Mormons do not regard the Bible anywhere like they regard the Book of Mormon. There's no comparison. The Bible is greatly, greatly inferior. And the average Mormon has nothing ever to do with the Bible. So no matter what they say about the Bible as far as respecting it and it's a source of their authority and all of that, that's complete nonsense. Now, they, Mormons, will remind their fellow Mormons that there are imperfections inherent in all Bible translations, but there are not such imperfections in the Book of Mormon. And they say that many plain and precious things have been removed from the Bible. Joseph Smith said, "I told the brethren that the Book of Mormon was the most correct of any book on earth and the keystone of our religion, and a man would get nearer to God by abiding by its precepts than by any other book." And they don't even go by it. They don't go by the Bible, and they don't go by the Book of Mormon. Their prophet, he'd be really upset with this. No, he wouldn't be upset at all. They're still going by him. All he ended up was with a huge following of people. It may be presumed, therefore, that if there should be disagreement between the King James and the Book of Mormon, there's no question that they will always take the Book of Mormon. But most Mormons, they're unstudied people. They're not studying these things. They're not dealing with these things. Most of them are dealing with one thing, really, and that's their genealogies. And they delve into that by the hour and by the week and the month and the year. And then they're just involved in, it's just kind of like a family organization is what it's more like. Now what we want to do next is look at some of the problems really with the Book of Mormon. And we'll go through this rather quickly. Now I'll read a verse here from the Book of Mormon. This is in Mormon 9, verses 32 to 34. And the Book of Mormon starts on page 460. Not real familiar with this book. Can't find these chapters quite like I can in the Bible. Verse 32, Mormon chapter 9, verse 32. "And now behold, we have written this record according to our knowledge in the characters which are called among us the Reformed Egyptian, being handed down and altered by us according to our manner of speech. Altered means translated. And if our plates had been sufficiently large, we should have written in Hebrew. But the Hebrew hath been altered by us also. And if we could have written in Hebrew, behold, you would have had no imperfection in our record. And this is what Mormon wrote. But they had to write in the Egyptian instead of the Hebrew. But the Lord knoweth the things which we have written, and also that none other people knoweth our language. Therefore he hath prepared means for the interpretation thereof. Now, when it says nobody knows our language, that means nobody knows the Reformed Egyptian that was used in the Book of Mormon. Remember, these plates were in Reformed Egyptian. They weren't in Hebrew, they weren't in Greek, they weren't in any other language. Reformed Egyptian. And it says here, none other people knoweth our language. So it sounds like God put together this language just for them to use in recording the Book of Mormon. That's what it sounds like, at least. Now, remember how Mr. Harris, Martin Harris, the good old farmer, how he went to Professor Anthon to get him to authenticate that this was Reformed Egyptian. Well, Mormons say that Anthon did that, that he looked at it and he did authenticate it. That's what they've said in their history. But now, if that was true, then what about this verse that says, no man knoweth our language? How could Anthon know the language? How can he authenticate it? He cannot authenticate it. It says, he hath prepared means for the interpretation thereof. That's the Urim and the Thummim. Those are those big glasses. That you can't look through both lenses at the same time. You gotta put both eyes out of just one. That was the means to interpret it, to translate it. Now, Anthon didn't have that. They supposedly took it to Anthon and he said, yes, this is Reformed Egyptian. How could that be? No man knoweth our language. Now, as far as, remember how E.D. Howe wrote to Anthon and said, now tell me what really happened? And he said, I began to suspect right away this whole thing was a hoax. This was a sham just to get money. And it wasn't Reformed Egyptian. There is no such thing and all the rest. Well, Mormons will say, and I don't know if they'll say this now, but in their history of explaining these things, they say, well, Anthon did fill out an affidavit. And he signed it and he said, yes, this is Reformed Egyptian. But then he took the affidavit back and tore it up when he found that Moroni had taken the plates away and he couldn't look at them anymore. So that's how they explain that. And now they say, well, Anthon has just turned into a liar because he wasn't able to keep the plates. Maybe that trying to show somehow Anthon wanted these and put them in a museum or more study or whatever else. But I tend to believe the letter Mr. Anthon wrote to Mr. Howe much more than anything the Mormons have to say about it. So the whole thing about having somebody authenticate it when it said that no man knoweth the language, that's a just a blatant contradiction right there. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. It's non-existent. Now, if you ask any sort of a Bible scholar, what is his basis or his foundation for believing that the Bible is the Word of God and for believing that what's recorded in this book was really written in ancient times and has actually been passed down to us, what will he say? Well, we have 800 major Old Testament manuscripts and we have 4,800 New Testament manuscripts. Now that's a lot. There's no other book like this. There is no other book so well verified by manuscript authority. The manuscript authority that we have for the Bible is absolutely incredible. It's impeachable. It is amazing that God, well, that's what you'd expect, but it really is an amazing thing that he has preserved all these manuscripts. See, he really wants us to know that he wrote the book, that it really is authentic. Now, I ask a Mormon the same question. We have none. That's N-O-N-E. None. As in zero. Z-E-R-O. Now, which one is really supported? Which one is shown to be authentic historically? The Bible. He is basing his entire religion on the veracity of Joseph Smith and his peepstone. That's what he's doing. And supposedly a few people that saw the plates. And we already talked about those witnesses. And those witnesses do not sound like the most reputable characters. It'd be like getting somebody to testify in court that you just happened to find down in Pioneer Square, sleeping on a bench, smelling like he'd been living in a wine bottle. I mean, that's almost what it is. They were all relatives. All were relatives or associates, close connections. Now, see, this is a terrible thing. See, they get involved in something, and then, see, it's like embracing the fact, this is what is taught as fact, that in order to be saved, you have to believe the Trinity. Now, when you accept that, it's pretty hard to really investigate the Trinity objectively. It's pretty hard to investigate it, willing to accept, at least willing to accept that it could be wrong. It's pretty hard to do, isn't it? That's really hard to do. You've already made a belief in the Trinity and salvation synonymous. That's what they've done. It's exactly what's happened. The devil's been really clever in this thing. And so then the same thing here. Same thing with the Jehovah's Witnesses. Same exact thing. It's very hard to get them to be honest. Now, Anthon was an Egyptologist, and he was a noted expert. Now, if they were real manuscripts, and they were of a real language, then he would have been excited beyond words. But he thought the whole thing was a hoax. See, and he would have no reason to label it as a hoax if this was really authentic. He would not have had any reason to do that. He's a professor at Columbia University. I mean, when they find something, when they dig something up somewhere, and it starts to show some tremendous things about history, they guard it with their lives. If they would have brought this in and said, I copied this, and this is the letters that are on these plates, is this really Reformed Egyptian? Where did you get this? Wow. Can I see these myself? He would have been excited beyond words. He would have fallen over in shock. He would have been jumping up and down. He would have been excited. He wasn't excited. That's scribbling. Just scribbling. Not all it was. Now, another thing is, how is it that Israelites, remember this is 600 B.C., they come over in 600 B.C., as far as the Nephites and Lamanites, and they've always abhorred the Gentile culture and the Gentile languages. Now, why are they using pagan Egyptian? Why? Why does he say here, we should have written in Hebrew? See, if our plates had been sufficiently large, we should have written in Hebrew? Well, see, that the idea is Reformed Egyptian is pictures. So you can say a lot more in less space. But would they really do that? I mean, these are Hebrews. Are they really going to use hieroglyphics? Are they really going to use a pagan language? Are they really going to do that? They're not going to do that. Hebrew is available. Why in the world are they going to use pictures of pagans? See, from a pagan language. Why are they going to do that? They wouldn't have done that. They just would not have done that. It's not possible. It's totally impossible. Now, okay, I do have that there. 2 Corinthians 13:1, this is a couple of things that the Mormons say that the Book of Mormon is. And we'll just go through these real quick. They don't mean anything, that's for certain. 2 Corinthians 13:1, And these are things Mormons use, trying to support the Book of Mormon as being from God. This is the third time I am coming to you. In the mouth of two or three witnesses shall every word be established. So the Book of Mormon is the second witness. Well, then is Doctrine and Covenants the third witness, and Pearl of Great Price the fourth witness, and other things the fifth, sixth, seventh. Is that what it is? This has nothing to do with books. And say, I've got one book now, but in time we'll have a second book. I'm not talking about books. I'm talking about the Word of God coming through His ministry and through other ministers, other saints, apostles, prophets, pastors, whoever. And you don't just take one witness. You need more than one witness. You need a further confirmation. And but they use this verse, which has nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with it at all. And they use John 3, verse 16, trying to show why Christ came to America. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And so He loved the whole world, and that's why Jesus Christ in 34 A.D. came here to America. But that doesn't explain why He didn't go to the Antarctic, and to Japan, and to Hawaii, and to China, and a few other places. Why would He just come here? If He so loved the world, why didn't He take a world tour? Why didn't He make one of those barges? Start letting the wind blow Him from place to place. It doesn't make any sense. Now, another verse is used. See, there is nothing to Mormonism. There really isn't. And Mormonism needs to be... need to set Mormonism up and put tons of TNT under it and detonate it. And that's the truth. It's just like Catholicism. It's just like Jehovah's Witnesses. And we need to love the people, but we've got to hate this doctrine. This doctrine is abomination. And we need to have God's feelings, so it's not demons of hate that take over and other such things. But Isaiah 29, verses 4 and 11, "And thou shalt be brought down, and shalt speak out of the ground, and thy speech shall be low out of the dust, and thy voice shall be as one that hath a familiar spirit out of the ground, and thy speech shall whisper out of the dust." Verse 11. "And the vision of all is become unto you as the words of a book that is sealed, which men deliver to one that is learned, saying, Read this, I pray thee, and he saith, I cannot, for it is sealed." Now, verse 4 is really being used, talking about the plates being in the hill Cumorah, which is, that's far-fetched. Now, the most incredible thing is, it says, as one that hath a familiar spirit. So that's a demon. Now, that's the truth. There's going to be something you take out of the dust, and it's going to have a familiar spirit. It's going to be demons. Now, if anything, it shows a demonic origin. But, you know, we're not going to take time here to really discuss the meaning, but what does it have to do with a hill Cumorah and gold plates? It doesn't have anything to do with it. And if it, as the Mormons are trying to use it, then the familiar spirit is an indictment against it. It doesn't show it coming from God. It would be showing that it came from demons. It's such a strange thing. But they make the Book of Mormon the sealed book there, verse 11. It's a sealed book, and you give it to people, and they read, and they can't tell what it means. But it's talking about God's Word, and they weren't giving the Book of Mormon to anybody then. It didn't exist. They're talking about God's Word coming then to those people, and it does have future application, as more of the Word of God would be made available, but it doesn't have anything with the Book of Mormon. It doesn't have anything to do with it at all. To say the least, it's a total absurdity, and the chapter is a chapter of judgment. That's what it's dealing with, is judgment. It doesn't have anything to do with Mormonism. Also, Ezekiel chapter 37. See, on these kind of things, this is where we have to realize the burden of proof rests with them. It doesn't rest with us. Almost throw your hands down in despair and say, how can I even talk to these people? About the way it is. But the proof is not something that we have to deal with. They've got to bring proof first. If they don't bring any proof, there's nothing that we can do except show them what the truth of Scripture is and pray that somehow God can get through to their hearts. Ezekiel 37, verse 15 through 17 is talking about, says, for Judah and for his children of Israel, then take another stick and write upon it Joseph. Joseph Smith said, that's me. Take this stick and write Joseph Smith. That's the Book of Mormon. And on the other stick, Ephraim. And so one's the Book of Mormon, and the other is the Bible. And you join these two together, and now you've got the whole Revelation. Pretty amazing, huh? Pretty amazing. These verses have nothing to do with books. It has to do with people. It has to do with tribes. John 10, verse 16. This shows how dishonest Joseph Smith was. He's not trying to interpret the Bible. John 10, 16, and other sheep I have, which are not of this fold. Them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice. There shall be one fold and one shepherd. Now they say the other sheep are the Indians. And so Jesus had to go and minister to them here in America. But when he says, I have other sheep which are not of this fold, that would say they're not of the same race, same nationality. That's what's involved. That's the implication of it. But Indians are Israelites. So they're not other sheep. They're not of another fold. They're of the same fold, and they're the same sheep. They just happen to be located somewhere else. See, the other sheep are Gentiles. It's not Indians. Talking about you've got Israelites and you've got Gentiles. You've got Jews and you have the people of the nations, the non-Jews. I'm not talking about two groups of Israelites, the Israelites in Palestine and the Israelites that are somehow Indians in America. It's a pretty wild interpretation. Now, the Book of Mormon is a literary impossibility. And we'll go through a number of reasons why. Number one, the date of the Egyptian writing makes it a literary impossibility. Now, we don't know exactly when, we don't really know exactly when hieroglyphics would have actually started. We don't know. We can't assume that it started from the Tower of Babel. It might have. Hieroglyphics might have been an evolution of some other languages that even came later, you know, after the Tower of Babel. But I don't really know, and I don't know that anybody really would. But if the Jaredites left for the New World, which is what is stated in the Book of Mormon, in 2250, right after the Tower of Babel, and they go there and they start recording their history in Reformed Egyptian hieroglyphics, that would then say, as far as Mormon history goes, hieroglyphics had to start at the Tower of Babel. That's what it would say. And then they continued to write their history. Now, if they really had hieroglyphics from the time they left Babel to cross in their 8 barges to America, then how can it be Reformed Egyptian? It would have to be New Egyptian. Couldn't be Reformed. It's just come into existence. Here they are at the Tower of Babel, and all the people are given different languages. And then this group from Jared, forming the Jaredites, they're going to go to America, and they're speaking Egyptian. You write what you speak, and you speak what you write. And so, and we find out from Joseph Smith in the Book of Mormon that it's Reformed Egyptian. Now, if you're at the Tower of Babel and you're given a new language, everybody's given new languages, and you're given a new language, and it's Egyptian, and you're going to write in Egyptian hieroglyphics, that new language cannot be Reformed Egyptian hieroglyphics. Reformed means modified. It means that it started like this, and then it has changed, and it's been reformed. Reform doesn't mean new. It means changed, modified. It's evolved. It's gone through certain derivations. It's not precisely like it was at the outset. So how can there be such a thing as Reformed Egyptian for the Jaredites to be writing it? There cannot be. It's impossible. And as far as there have never been any archaeological discoveries anywhere at any time here in America or anywhere else of such a thing known as Reformed Egyptian. Let me give you just a couple other points, and then we'll break here. Lehi left Jerusalem in 600 B.C., and he left from that main city of Judah, Jerusalem. Now, Jews never spoke Egyptian in Jerusalem. So how is he going to go off to America and write in Egyptian? How's he going to do that? And the one other point is that hieroglyphics had been replaced by cursive Egyptian by 800 B.C. That's 200 years before. That's according to Isby. So there is no such thing at the time of Lehi as hieroglyphics. They don't exist. It just can't be. It's impossible. It can't be done. And the next thing we'll look at is the nature of translating this and how it would come out if it was really true. So we'll take a break here.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Well, I'm really, really
it's not being taped right now. We're on break.
And we'll go through and see what we got. We're going to do that. 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 We're going to do that.
I'm going to go to the next one.